Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have you been dismissed from work just for the way you tut? Have you been fired simply for forgetting to tidy your coffee cup away? Do you suspect your employer has simply failed to secure a second series and is, in fact, a rotten shit? Support for this podcast comes from Bingley, Bingley and Other, North Norfolk's finest employment lawyers. Get your coat and then get in touch. Contact us at www.everyonebutjill.com.
Hello, Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just a quick word before we get on with episode 2 of the podcast to say a very quick but absolutely massive thank you to everyone who's listened, subscribed and rated us. We really did start this just as a bit of fun, and we found that thanks to your support, we've ended up at number 1 in the TV and film chart and number 3 in the overall iTunes chart, which is insane and unexpected. So thank you very much. Please do keep listening, spread the word, and on with the episode.
Monkey tennis? Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis?
Not my face! I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express!
Monkey tennis? Monkey tennis?
Got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Rolled on the thighs of a virgin.
Monkey tennis?
At ease, stand down, and you're not in the army anymore. Welcome to the second episode of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge podcast. Today we're going to be looking at Alan Attraction, episode 2. My name is Adam Brooks, and I'm also joined by Tom Dark.
Aha!
Nick Older. And Tom Stab.
You're sexy.
So, according to the VHS label of this series, Alan Attraction is described thusly. It's Valentine's Day, and Alan enjoys a romantic liaison with a receptionist at Pear Tree Productions. Passions are aroused, and some hot, sticky moments ensue as Alan discovers what a business and pleasure really can mix. So, I'm not sure about anyone else, but I think this is probably among the best of the Alan Partridge episodes there's ever been.
I would be inclined
definitely.
To agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So many great points to touch on. We'll get into them in some detail, but obviously there's a lot of chocolate in this episode.
Yeah, we should just say that chocolate oranges are available.
Again, easy for you to say, Nick.
They are available at Rolling at Rolling Orange.
Nick just had to try to say that.
He's having a strong call of ambulance. Okay, so thanks for that, by the way. I think The retailer Rawlinson's, you might remember from the previous episode, Tom Dark was rightly chastised for being the only one that was familiar with Foster's menswear. What is Rawlinson's? I'm looking to you, Tom, for your knowledge of budget retailers that potentially only operated in the Devizes regions.
I've got nothing for you.
Is it made up?
I presumed it's made up.
Tom Stab is going to take to Google here whilst we can
Once
continue
again,
chatting.
A man looks up a thing.
Producer Jed says it's real. That's exciting because I thought...
Although producer Jed is not allowed to speak. We've told him this already. you do have the four of us in a room with producer Jed, but we have not given him a microphone. So
yeah, I can't find any reference to...
Spell it with an A. Rawlinson. I presumed it was Rawlinson. Okay. Yeah, okay. This is the sound of live research.
And Rawlinson's
is a shop in Peterborough by the looks of things.
Chartered
not
accountants.
Too far away from...
That's
not it, is it?
Okay,
the mystery I can't continues. Find any Yeah, I think it might be. Well,
I just assumed it was some kind of like local corner shop type thing. So.
Mm-hmm.
Just had to say that.
We've got a couple of shop damaged chocolate oranges on the table in front of us just to keep
crack them open
real.
At some point, surely.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe finish the podcast first. The episode opens again with him broadcasting Radio Norwich, always the same, with the news that they've had to withdraw their telephone Cluedo because of a legal action from the makers of Cluedo, which seems entirely fair.
I think so, yeah.
Also, it's Valentine's Day, so it opens with... I was a bit confused because there's four Valentine's cards on the desk, but it's not clear whether they're on Dave Clifton's side or on Alan Partridge's side. And I sort of thought neither of them would get four, surely. Unless...
Two each?
Yeah.
Share them out?
One from each parent?
Exactly, that works.
Yeah, one's not going to be from Lynn, is it?
Mm, no, probably not.
Well,
I'm not sure. I think she would send him one and he would... be appalled and affa- but he wouldn't put it out no, in the studio.
I don't think she would have sent him one.
No, I'm not sure.
Do you think she loves him?
Well, that was something I did want to discuss this episode, but maybe we should get to that later when she tries to upstage Jill with her snazzy cardigan.
Very good point.
Let's do that.
We'll come back to that.
He does give a bit of a shout out to Lynn though. His tireless PA, Lynn.
50.
Absolutely. They chose 50 as her age, by the way, because they were annoyed by comedians saying that only odd numbers were funny. And they thought, on the commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, it's comedy wisdom that you're like 47, 33, they're funnier numbers. Right. But they just knew that saying Lynn, 50, would be funnier. So,
well, yeah. Nick's laughing, so.
I thought it was great.
Nick is quite easily amused. I was going to say, actually, talking about the chocolate oranges, a few of us in the team were lucky enough to go to the Alan Partridge Alpha Papa film premiere. The other year, and
the other year.
Who are these people? Why was I not invited to this?
Well, I mean, let's put it this way: it wasn't Tom Stab, but it was me, and it was Adam, and it was Nick. So, okay. So
what?
Producer Jen is loving this,
and then just an empty chair.
Yeah. I mean,
not really. I mean, we had the ticket.
Come on, we won't invite him so we can eat his chocolate orange.
Exactly. So basically what I loved about
you
this was
ignorant.
every seat in the cinema had a shop damaged chocolate orange.
Soiled
chocolate orange on the seat.
Yeah, a lovely touch.
Yeah.
Not much else happened, I don't think, in the opening, in the radio station.
No, I think all you get really is his conversation with Dave Clifton is pretty strained, and you can see that Dave Clifton basically has little to no time for Alan here while he's kind of going back and forth with his awkward plug.
That is a relationship I love to watch deteriorate.
Yes, yeah, it's great.
It's so good.
Although you do have a nice thick slice of Thin Lizzy at the start here, which
Oh, that's right. I was always
Alanism.
A bit disappointed. Well, not disappointed. When we went to see Alpha Papa at the premiere, sorry, Tom Stab.
When 75% of us went to see the Alpha Papa
and had 100% of a great time.
It was brilliant.
This country.
But one thing that develops from here to the movie is that Dave Clifton became such a pathetic figure in the movie. I almost preferred it when he was something of a challenge.
Yeah,
for Alan,
I agree with that.
I always thought they got it a bit wrong with the film. I feel like Dave Clifton should have been the arch nemesis for the movie, not Pat.
In the commentary as well, they imagined Dave Clifton's story after this series ends, and they thought that what would have happened is that he would have got a big break that makes Alan incredibly jealous, like, you know, early morning breakfast at Virgin Radio or something like that.
Ooh, what a big break.
But that within 2 weeks, his kind of excessive boozing would have caused him to say something offensive and be sacked again. So yes. Dave would have had his, like, short moment in the sun, but ultimately, Alan is the star. Yeah, he would have messed it up through booze.
I also did want to say the Alan and Dave exchange at the start of this episode is just to amuse myself, if nothing else, I do like to repeat the Valentine's exchange every year about the when I came down this morning, I couldn't open my door.
Lost your keys?
Yeah, exactly. I basically do that joke on Twitter every year. With diminishing results, to be honest, but I do it anyway.
There's a lot of that, actually, isn't there? Between the two of them, there's a lot of one of them trying to set up a joke and the other one puncturing it before it's ready.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So then they move on to the Travel Tavern, where there's two new members of staff, which makes me think a Travel Tavern is a high turnover area. People don't stay there long. I wonder why.
But they're additional members of staff. We just haven't met them in the first episode.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, there's a little hint of Alan actually being quite sweet in that he brings Sophie the dark chocolate orange because he remembered she didn't like milk. So he's not,
she likes milk chocolate.
Yeah, but you know, like there's little bits of humanity about him. He's not a total monster. But
although at this point in the program, I have got a note that just says, "Is Alan a sex pest?"
I don't know.
I think it's quite interesting, his kind of relationships with the opposite sex and things like that. Because, well, I mean, one, he's just, apart from with lovely Jill in this episode, he's largely unsuccessful. But yeah, I think, and then you have the things where you have...
He likes Susan.
But then Susan eggs him on sometimes just, I think, to kind of freak him out a little bit.
Yeah, just to keep him in a comfortable place. But he obviously doesn't fancy Sophie. He knows that's outside the limits because they
ask him... at him every time.
Yeah, and also they ask him if he sent her the Valentine's card, and he says, you know, she's young enough to be my sister, you know, blah, blah, blah. Either way, it's incest. So
which she enjoys.
Yeah.
But he's incapable of giving a compliment because I think he kind of remarks on... Susan's earrings, isn't he? Kind of like little tears. Yeah. And she describes them as rolled gold. He's like, well, not real gold, is it?
Old plated.
Yeah.
But he's trying, but he can't. I feel like to him, accuracy is more important than flattery.
Yeah.
Like if he's got the opportunity to prove someone wrong, he'll take that.
Basically, like every dad in the world.
Yeah. So we meet, in this first scene in the Travel Tavern in this episode, we meet Ben for the first time, don't we?
We do.
Who, as we learn throughout the series, is probably Sophie's boyfriend of some nature.
Love interest. Just because he said that doesn't mean that he actually sent it.
He's also
now the podcast is just going to be us recreating the script line for line.
That's, well, I mean, it's kind of what we do anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also supposed to be 5 years younger than her. I read that he's pitched at 22 and she's pitched at 27.
True. That is something I did not know.
I wouldn't have. I mean, I don't know why he seems about the same age as her. But yeah, you know, that's what I read.
Going to your comment, Tom, about Alan basically being a bit of a sex pest. He does kind of make that comment where he insinuates that he'd be happy to watch Susan through some kind of binoculars or telescope, just going.
I think that's probably why I've got written down is Alan a sex pest.
Yeah, I think
it does kind of it does lend itself
he's a sex
to that.
Pest.
Yeah. So with the character Ben, just to take a slight Partridge diversion, what other shows have we seen him in?
I've got my hand
Tom
up.
Tom Stab has raised his hand immediately. Yes.
He plays the boyfriend in Spaced.
Correct.
Yeah.
he's at university in Hell. I mean, Hull.
Yes, that's exactly. And he hears Daisy making sex noise on the phone in Space. He had quite a major role in later series of Teachers.
Oh, that's where I know him from.
He's also featured in Smack the Pony. He was in
with
one
Sally Phillips.
Yep, he was in one episode of Saxondale. He also featured in The Look of Love, which was the Steve Coogan.
So basically, he's a pal of Steve Coogan.
Pretty much,
you need someone, he's your man.
But there are two. Again, the great thing about this podcast is if you can't be bothered to look at Wikipedia or IMDb, we are here to do that for you, so you can just listen.
You are so welcome.
Yep. So thanks, IMDb, for these bits of information. He has also featured in The Bill. And Midsummer Murders.
Of course he has, as every British actor.
Exactly. Now, this is a great thing. Nearly every kind of key actor in Partridge has had a part in some either Doctors or The Bill or Midsummer Murders or a combination of all three or Casualty.
Brilliant.
So always good to get the IMDb figures up.
He was hired for all six episodes, but they just couldn't fit him in the first one because they had so many people to introduce, so he had to wait his turn.
Oh, so it's not like they recorded scenes with him and they cut them. He was just never actually...
No, they just couldn't find a way to squeeze him in amongst all the other shenanigans of episode one.
See, to me, I always felt like Ben kind of... I feel like he... I don't think he likes Alan.
He helps set up a lot of gags, I think.
But I've always felt like he comes across as quite a smarmy character because I think he knows that Alan quite likes the ladies at reception And I just feel like he doesn't really... I think he feels like he's taking piss out of Alan knowingly a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's definitely a dick.
And there's, yeah. But, there's one particular line in the last
episode. But you still like him. Yeah, no,
because he sets up quite a lot of funny things in the episode.
A lovable knob. There's a line in the last episode where he cements his dickishness, which will... Keep subscribing. I will tell you all about it in a few episodes time.
Yeah.
What's up next? Oh, he complains about his soap withstanding only one aggressive body scrub. That's
yep. But pivotal. He figures out a way to make it work with two.
He doesn't figure it out.
Good point.
He is told. Sophie does. He could just use two. Yeah, he enacts it. He just used two. I suppose that could work.
Also, is the most or the best unintentional put down? You don't need beauty sleep. Well, 40 weeks.
40 weeks.
Yeah.
But actually, I feel like he does that a lot, particularly interacting with Susan, that he will try to pay a compliment, but then he'll take it back by saying another line afterwards. Yeah. Which
again, it's like, it's that accuracy thing. He says something, but he can't leave it because he knows it's not 100% true. Yeah. So he has to then change it. Yeah.
So, and then not long after this, we have the classic I'm not driving a mini metro scene with Lynn, which is,
again, another point.
Fantastic Partridge.
I had a little look online to see how much a mini metro from 1997 would currently fetch in today's market.
It's a Rover metro.
They've rebadged it, you fool.
He will just talk over you.
I will just talk over you. I had a little look online and prices range from £575 to up to £1,750.
For a new car?
For a mini metro 1997.
Wow.
So you can get one for as cheap as £575 and one as expensive as £1,750 from looking at What Car Magazine online.
Not your words.
Not my words, the words of What Car Magazine. I also did, another fact, the Rover Metro was named What Car of the Year 1991, which would surely have appealed to Alan.
I also love this exchange with Lynn because it contains the line that it doesn't really fit in anywhere else, but always makes me laugh, which is, you're always going on about Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, that is a
great one.
One of the reasons they threw that in, apparently, is because they wanted there to be a little sinister undercurrent to Lynn. Like, she's not entirely a good person. So they threw in, like, her sort of admiration for racist Benjamin Netanyahu. Right. And they like the idea that, like, when he'd had his TV show in the previous series, she would have had a few people working under her and she would have been ruthlessly cruel to them, sort of passed on the cruelty she gets from Alan.
It's a trickle-down system of cruelty.
Yeah, basically. It's something you see later on in later episodes when, you know, with Tony Hare's demise and her reaction, that kind of thing. You can tell that she's not entirely a wholesome Baptist lady.
Right.
They also had a backstory where she got kissed by a boxer when she was 17. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but...
Are we assuming that Lynn was Alan's PA when he first started on the Know Me, Knowing You?
I would presume so, because at the point she comes into this series fully formed. It's not like he's training her or hiring her or anything. I feel like she's been around. Right.
Yeah. Are we aware of the gap between?
Because there's no kind of element to the story where she's a new PA that doesn't know him or.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So I would assume so, but I don't know. Maybe, I don't know if. Because obviously, kind of the Alan timeline is all quite comprehensively referenced in the book. So whether you could backtrack and find the first mention of his assistant in the book.
Yeah.
Because obviously,
we've not bothered to read it.
No.
Lynn isn't named.
Lynn is never referred to by name in the book. Right. It's always my assistant.
Yep. Shortly after that point, we get the introduction of a prop that proves to be pivotal in future episodes, namely the 12-inch plate. The first thing that occurred to me is he only ever brings it to buffets. So how is it a scam? If it's a buffet, you can just go back as often as you like. Why do you need a bigger plate?
That's the joke, isn't it?
I think that's
the joke.
Oh, I feel silly now.
You haven't understood.
Oh dear, oh dear.
I've discovered the joke while getting the joke.
That's fine. And that's part of the reason for us doing this.
Exactly, because people at home might also be simple.
So
like
if you miss that joke, if you didn't get that joke too, why not send us a tweet?
I understood that. I was just
that's
all right,
at the Partridge Pod.
Fine, guys, fine.
I was also thinking, so the mini metro scene with him and Lynn, would we all agree that I feel like he perhaps interacts with Lynn directly more in series one than series two? I feel like there are a lot more episodes, a lot more scenes which focus on him and Lynn one-on-one.
Well, I think in the second series, she's given a bit more context and backstory. Well, not necessarily backstory, but she's given more to do.
Her mother's money's come through.
And she's also dating that man from that he met at church. Yeah. They're laughing at Rain.
And like, he's got Sonya. So yeah, you know, there's only so much screen time to go around.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think that's, you know...
Yeah, I think...
So I feel there are more characters at a level where his screen time with Lynn is depleted.
Yeah. And he then goes on to have a conversation with Michael about identifying people's sausages by their dental records. That's right. He says, "Oh, you know, I want it charred to a crisp. You can only identify it by its dental records." And then Michael says, "Well, yeah," and you know, suggests you could fingerprint it. And then Alan's like, "No, that's ridiculous." But obviously,
up to that point, the conversation was grounded in reality.
Exactly.
But that was just too far.
Dental records, fine, but fingerprints, crazy.
I also made a note on this scene when he's with Michael. Just the awfulness of Michael's waistcoat and just the general Linton Travel Tavern kind of uniform.
It's very 90s.
Well,
though,
that's
isn't it.
Yeah. I mean, it is a 90s, but it ties in with obviously Alan always wears horrendous jumpers, the awful decor of the Travel Tavern, just like the horrendous patterns, the pastel colours. Even in the restaurant with Tony Hares in the previous episode, it's kind of everything is just a horrible 90s pastel shade.
Yeah, it's like a beige explosion.
It's horrendous, but it's very 90s, so this is what it is. But again, I think that thing about the kind of the awful hotels being very Partridge, it's anything that has those kind of Linton Travel Tavern type flowery patterns and pastel colour schemes, that's very much what this is all about.
Yeah, totally.
Also, on a practical level, if you've got a breakfast buffet, how can you request that your sausages are burnt to a crisp?
You've dropped a continuity bombshell.
I think Alan has such a relationship with Michael that he can ask for...
He's such a big deal in that hotel. I mean, he's probably the only guest in the hotel. Mm-hmm.
So we kind of spoke in the first episode about how Alan had been in the hotel for about 10 weeks. I'm going to look to Adam to give us an update in terms of Alan's timeline.
I'm going to have to fess up to a slight error. It's 10 weeks is the point he's been in the Travel Tavern in this episode. We're at 10 weeks. Come to think of it, I think those four Valentine's cards at the start were all Dave Clifton's. I don't think Alan got any.
The alcoholic Dave Clifton.
Yep, that's right. His boozy lovers. By the way, I've got a page in my notes here that is just underlined saying innuendo watch with Jill. So let me know when you want me to deploy it.
Oh, okay.
I've listed all of them.
Again, if you haven't enjoyed the first 10 minutes of this podcast, do keep listening for that. Yep.
Coming up. So we're up to the point where he has made the difficult decision to sack everyone from Pear Tree Productions rather than downsize his car, right?
Absolutely.
Even though
he could have kept it to a skillful staff of two.
Yep.
Yes. and he could have had the Rover Metro with the walnut gearbox, but he chose not to.
I think that's important to know.
Very important.
I had in my notes here that I think a bit of a continuity issue, perhaps. So when he's at the Pear Tree Productions office and before he started the sacking, so you go into one of the strip club dream sequences, you actually notice in the background all the staff already have the party hats on. So he's kind of come in, he's lied about having a second series, and then 2 seconds later, everybody's got kind of silver party hats on and party poppers out. It's just ridiculous.
Also, one of the guys who looks to be about 25, if not younger, is wearing a Deacon Blue t-shirt.
Oh, yeah, amazing.
It was 1997.
Maybe that was Alan's influence.
Yeah, I wonder if Alan is exclusively that's how that guy got hired, because they're both fans of.
I think it must be, because I don't think Deacon Blue were that big. Like, they'd had a hit in the early 90s, but they weren't that big then.
Very
so I think that's
much
a little,
an 80s proposition.
Yeah.
So, they all get sacked with for various ridiculous reasons, and then they're sent off down the fire escape.
One man because he tuts.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a lot of trouble with this episode from the commentary. They had a lot of trouble engineering a situation where Jill was out of the room, but everyone else was in it, and that's why she gets sent off for snacks, basically.
Also, one of my favourite quick Alan lines in this Pear Tree production scene, where he just turns around to somebody and says, "Bash your ass."
Hey! Oh, yeah.
Also, what about the guy that goes out to get some sparkling white wine? What happens to him?
Oh, yeah.
Another continuity bombshell.
And what else does he get?
The BBC are going to try and get this podcast stopped for pointing out continuity errors.
Yeah. Piper Pringles?
Piper Pringles will suffice.
Well, we've actually got a Piper Pringles here, actually.
We have. You can't see it. You'll just have to take our word for it.
Well, you can hear Tom eating that now, so...
We've gone method, basically. Okay, we're going to take a picture of it and put it on the interwebs, on the socials for you.
And so you can also see how our microphones are basically sellotaped together as well.
So nothing but the best.
Yeah.
So what does Alan say when Jill comes back and it's apparent that basically no one else is in the room?
All sorts.
I've got, well, do you want me to, I've got a couple of innuendo watch with Jill. Well, I was basically going to say, I think before we get to that, he has to kind of make up a bit of a lie to explain away the fact that no one's there.
Oh, you're talking Long Stanton Spice Museum.
Now, yes. Has anyone been on the Long Stanton Spice Museum website?
Have you, Nick?
Yes, I have.
But it doesn't exist, does it? Or does it?
Surely not.
It does exist. There's a genuine website. I suggest you check it out. And there's an FAQ, or basically on the homepage, it does stress, yes, this is a real museum. Because there's clearly so many people that don't believe that it's actually a thing. But if you go on there, you will see that it's actually real.
And what is that website address for everybody listening?
Longstantonspicemuseum.co.uk. Because I've literally just had a look at it because I didn't believe that it was a real place. And it genuinely is.
It actually looks very classy.
It does,
website.
Actually. Yeah, they've got quite a good website.
Oh, in fact, on the front page of their website, it still has a question that says, is Long Stanton Spice Museum real?
See?
Yeah, amazing.
Maybe we should organise a day trip.
I'm not sure, is the owl sanctuary real that he takes Lynn to?
No, it's not.
It's not.
Although it is, it's a gig venue, it's a music venue.
Yeah, someone's opened a venue presumably in tribute to this, which was under threat last year, but is now safe for the
time. Oh, I thought it was closing down. I've got in my notes it was closing down.
I think they've rebadged it, you fool.
Good news.
At the time of speaking, it is fine, and they put on good gigs, including friends of the podcast, Tellison. They played there recently.
Big up, Tellison.
So this is the beginning of when I started paying proper attention to Innuendo Watch with Jill. All your segments are intact. That's the first chocolate related bomb dropped.
I love the way he reacts to all the Jill innuendos as well. It's always like,
his noises are incredible. Oh yeah, there's something I noticed when he was in the dream sequence. The person supposedly playing Tony Hares says, "I like your thong," but it's not in the voice of that actor. I think they've had to dub it in afterwards.
Really?
Yeah,
bit of ADR.
Is that another continuity bombshell?
A bit weird.
God, they are spaffing at the Brian Center, aren't they, on this episode?
Back to Innuendo Watch. There's then, you're packed in a bit tight. I prefer fingers. Chocolate ones? Don't mind, really. And that's when you get that noise. It's all fallen into place now. I think that's a bit later in the episode when he's talking about how long he's been pubic for.
No, don't you? Have you got also, you probably call a spade a spade?
Actually, you call it a big tool. Yeah.
It's also important to note that there's a fair portion of this conversation where he's basically talking through a half-closed door.
Oh, yeah.
Because he hasn't got the confidence to just have a conversation with someone fear of rejection.
His original plan was to lock her in because she was fired. And so I think he only...
Again, locking a woman in, just her and Alan, a bit of sex bestie.
Classic Alan Beck.
Yeah, and also he's basically keeping this conversation going just to see if he's actually might get his end away.
Yeah.
Now, just on the character of Jill, who is played by Julia Deakin.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we seen Julia Deakin in? Tom Stab's hand has gone up again immediately. I think I know where this is going.
Plays Tim and Daisy's She plays Tim and Daisy's landlady in the sitcom Spaced.
That is correct. She plays Marsha in Spaced.
Marsha, that's it. Yeah.
And you'll be pleased to know she's also been in Doctors.
And the Bill?
No, but she has been in Holby City.
So she hasn't quite got the three.
She's not done the three.
She hasn't got the hat trick.
No, she'll never get the bill now either.
Medical hat trick.
You need Casualty or the bill.
Yeah, to complete that.
Yeah. They filmed all the owl shots at the owl sanctuary first, and then they worked out what he was going to say about the owls afterwards.
What do you mean?
So they went down to the owl sanctuary, they filmed all the owl-only shots.
Right, okay.
And then they worked out the kind of, you know, the death row stuff that he comes up with.
I think that's possibly my favourite, like, bit of writing in the whole episode, the how to execute
a bird of prey.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the ones Steve Coogan liked best as well.
Because I think it seems like it's going nowhere. Like he's just rambling, and then there's a really good payoff at the end of it.
And again, I wonder how much of that, if any, was improvised as well.
Well, I guess it kind of links back to my opinion on this episode about it being really good, is that I think in terms of being the best written episode or how the quality of the writing, I think it's probably the best, because you've got the mini metro scene, which is brilliant. You've got the beef burgers for a palm and sausages exchange with Michael, and then this, and then also the sacking of people at Pear Tree Productions, which is also very, very funny. So I think probably this episode, when I went back and rewatched it, I laughed the most watching this
episode. Also it's kind of the Partridge mannerisms that you see in this episode. So things like the way when he's trying to kind of fool around with Jill at the owl sanctuary, so he's just like standing in a weird way being wacky. It's just so funny. But again, it's kind of, it's that thing. I don't think you could even nail that with like kind of stage directions within the script.
Yeah.
It comes down to Coogan inhabiting that character and just being Alan.
I'm going to throw it out there. It's my favourite episode of the series.
Oh, God, we've gone in early on
it's
that.
It's mine too. It's mine too.
Wow.
50%. This whole podcast was almost derailed for a second because I read something on Tom Stab's notes that I can't believe we're going to actually discuss. Talks about how Alan's been pubic for 31 years and then he's written a follow-up question to the host. How long have you been pubic? It's just a topic of discussion. I'm not going to answer that.
So, going back to Julia Deakin, yeah, can you name any films that she's been in?
I've got my hand up again.
She was, I think she was the hotel sort of owner in Hot Fuzz, I think. Or she was. Yes. She played a part in Hot Fuzz.
Yep.
Yep. So I'm guessing she's in Hot Fuzz. She also probably played a part in Shaun of the Dead and The World's End.
Yep.
Yeah.
There we go. I mean, she's been in other films, but those are the main things that we're going to care about here. So that's fine.
Strong Cornetto trilogy vibes.
Exactly.
So at that point, they're back to the hotel for the romantic buffet, £6.
I was going
to
say, that is romantic and value for money.
All you can eat as well for £6. You don't see that value anymore.
Got your big plate.
To do research for that, Armando and some of the writing team actually went to a load of hotel buffets and they found that they were looking for kind of, you know, little idiosyncratic things about those sorts of meals. And they found that there was one that had incredibly tight conditions around it. It was sort of, it was like something like, it was a buffet, but you could only have sausages from a certain portion of the, like, of the buffet, and you could only have three per person or something like that. Some kind of ridiculous terms and conditions.
Well, to be honest, if you're going to have a £6 all-you-can-eat buffet, people are going to take advantage. And so by limiting the amount of sausages people can have, that does allow them to keep costs down.
Would there be sausages on the menu for a Valentine's supper?
I think at the Linton Travel Tavern there probably would be.
Yeah, I think probably.
Toad in the Hole, sausage and mash.
Fair enough.
With cheap options.
A half bottle of champagne.
Yes.
Yep. So, we then see Alan basically make an incredibly romantic gesture where he, you know, excuses himself from the table and goes up to the live band, which basically is a guitarist and a keyboard player. And he begins to basically serenade Jill, who is described as the lady in red with bag in her mouth.
Orange hair and a cigarette in her mouth.
Absolutely. And I like to think with this, we don't need to kind of go over what happens. I think most people will basically know that Alan starts to sing, is incapable of finding the key. They keep repeating it over and over again. It's an absolute mess.
I'll forget it.
And you can, there's a couple of points where you kind of see extras in the background and no one is basically looking at him or caring what's going on apart from Jill. But yeah, he's completely incapable of singing. And I like to think, do we think there was any kind of like sound checking or preparation for this, or was it just completely spontaneous and Alan had kind of, you know, given a signal to the musicians?
In real life or in the show?
No, just in the show.
Oh, in the show.
I don't know how.
I feel like he would have done some prep, but he would have asked them all the wrong questions. So they hadn't actually
like,
set
what key is
up.
This song in?
Exactly. Like, play me the first
I think he's gone there. He's put his name down to sing that song
as
a surprise for Jill, but that's all he's done. Yeah.
Yeah. It's backfired. Or has it?
Well.
Well,
Jill will be sleeping with me tonight.
I don't remember saying that.
Come on.
All right.
But again, it's exchanges like that I think make this episode so good because it's just so quotable.
Yeah, and Steve Coogan was worried about his delivery of when he says "come on" to her because he meant to say it like, you know, Jill's, you're going to sleep with me, but he thinks he delivered that line in a way that made it sound like he was pleading with her. But I think he got it right. I think it was obvious that he expected her to go to bed with him.
Yeah, Jill's committed to basically have dinner. She's either gone home or somehow got a new dress.
Yeah.
She's at the Travel Tavern. It's only going one way, and that is up in the elevator to his room.
I think he knew he had to seal the deal because Lynn had turned up with her snazzy cardigan and her foot powder and was trying to get Jill to share the cab.
So,
wow.
Are you about to ask us how long we've been pubic?
No.
Okay.
Well, I think we're not talking about
this. That. No, the point you made, Tom, earlier about does, or do we think that Lynn is in love with Alan?
I
see. Stockholm syndrome, maybe.
Yeah, I feel it's a strange one because I feel in some episodes it is deliberately hinted towards like this exchange. So, you know, what. Like, has Lynn really gone all the way to the Travel Tavern just to tell Alan about the... Is it the walnut gear knob.
Walnut gear knob.
But then, as we can see, she's got her snazzy cardigan on. She's made up. So has she thought that Alan might be there alone and she could just have a nice romantic dinner with him?
I think
she knows that.
She sees Jill as a bit of a threat, doesn't she? Because kind of it's the relationship that she has with Alan that even though it's basically one of a slave and a master,
no affection.
There's no affection. She's a
So do we think it's so? It's not maybe a romantic interest in Alan. It's more just that companionship.
Yeah, it's for his time and attention. I think more than anything. But what I love is her attempt to sort of phase Jill by bringing the fungal foot powder and alerting her to Alan's condition, but he's completely oblivious to the fact that he's just like, great, very practical. She remembered.
Jill is a bit mortified though, to be fair. There's a look on her face that's like, what am I getting myself into?
Not mortified enough to not have sex with him about 15 minutes later.
Has she already agreed to have sex with him at this point?
The night could go anywhere, but clearly she's got it on her mind.
Yes,
she has.
She's got needs.
Also, during this dinner, it's worth mentioning that is the Bill Oddie mention of this episode, I believe.
That takes the count up to 3, averaging 1 per episode so far. I think we can maybe see a pattern emerging.
1.5.
I was going to say, that's basic maths.
Bad maths.
You said one per episode, but we're on episode 2. So we've established you were privately educated and
what did I say?
You said
3 Bill Oddie references.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought we were on episode 3. Right, okay. Right. 2 Bill Oddie. 2
Speaking, basic arithmetic, Bill Carr. Yeah. At this point, so you were privately educated, but just speaking and
2 beers. And
we've all had a beer. So at this point, they head upstairs. Reception alert Alan to the fact that they've rumbled his big plate scam.
Are they trying to sabotage what's about to happen? Because they're all waiting in reception.
They are chuckling away as basically Alan tries to leave with
Which
an air
a bit
of dignity.
Sad,
with,
really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah,
he's a little bit. He sort of has to steer Jill towards the lift because they're both ruined.
Are they?
Well, I think that's the insinuation that
she's certainly
basically smashed.
Oh, okay.
And then when they get up to his room, you have the brilliant bit where he comes out of the toilet saying, "I'd leave it for a bit for about 15 minutes."
So the first thing he does is has a poo.
I love the idea that basically he's like, "Okay, you know, put the TV on, watch whatever you want. I'm just going to go and do a big poo."
Or it's just basically, you know, that kind of thing where you go, "I'm just going to go freshen up."
Yeah,
he goes into the toilet.
There's no illusion about the kind of freshening up he's doing when you're in a travel town room that small.
Yeah, ironically, there is no freshening happening in that room.
Can I run you through a couple of choice phrases that come up during the sex scene?
Oh, please do.
Okay, obviously there's the negotiation over cash, which is absolutely brilliant, where he sort of ends up haggling by default with her about how much he's going to pay her to have sex with him, even though it was his understanding that no money would change hands. Armando Iannucci, I think, was a big fan of the fact that there was a conversation in the lift that they didn't have to write, but it's got comedy value of its own about the fact it would be free. And then I've written down some words he uses as a description of the sex they have: lovely, first class, superb, and it's all happening. And obviously he goes the holy trinity when trying to describe condoms as sheaths, prophylactics and rubber johnnies.
And then suggest that maybe at her age they don't even need them.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure Jill is a big fan of.
Yep. Let battle commence. That comes up as well. And shall I move on to the other one?
Yeah, it's pretty clear that Jill is in a different league to Carol in terms of lovemaking. And
this sounds like Nick has personal insight.
No. I just think it's implied. I mean, obviously, the scene is kind of in darkness, so you don't know what's going on. But I think what Alan is saying, he's clearly not very confident with Jill, who's basically, you know, taken the bull by the horns, so to speak, and is very much getting in there. And I think that, there's an insinuation or a suggestion that Jill is Premier League when it comes to lovemaking.
Whereas Alan was the one getting in there. He's like, do you like that?
Do you remember Jill is the one that introduces food into the equation?
Yeah, and the point you can tell where she is the leading partner in this scenario is when he tells her that she really, and I quote, knows her onions. The worst sex reference of all time.
I love this scene with him and Jill because you have, again, it's just classic Partridge quotes about pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre, access to Dixon's, wheelchairs, all that sort of thing. So I had a little thought. a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours, Max, actually comes from Norwich. So shall we try and get him on the phone and ask for his thoughts on the pedestrianisation of Norwich City
Centre? Amazing. That is a brilliant
idea. If that's not going to be podcast gold, I don't know what is.
An inside scoop.
We'll see. Yeah.
All right. Well, so
I'm confident.
So he doesn't know we're going to ring him. I think we should give it a try and see if we can get anything useful.
Right. Okay. I'm just going to get his name and number up on my phone and then I'll give him a call.
So we're going live to our Norwich City Centre correspondent, Max.
It's ringing.
Speakerphone.
Hello.
Hello, Maxim.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good, how are you?
We're good. We wanted to know, we're currently talking about Alan Partridge, and amongst numerous topics in this episode include the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre. So bear in mind, this is around 1997. Can you confirm that you are in fact from Norwich and were living in Norwich at this time?
I grew up in North Norfolk, but Norwich is only city area with any kind of like any decent shops or anything at all. So
the only place with it,
I would have been 11 in 1997.
Okay, can you remember anything about, did the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre, A, did it actually happen, and B, was it of benefit to Norwich City Centre?
So I believe that Norwich actually the first city in the UK to have a pedestrianised area.
Amazing facts. Can we fact check that?
Some big stats. It was in apparently in the 60s. And I think, is it Dixon's
that he refers to? Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so the Dixon's is on a street called Gentleman's Walk, which itself is pedestrianised, but obviously, it does allow for access to Dixon's and all the others. It's a typical UK high street. There are W.O. Smith's, Topshop,
Woolworths,
Foster's Menswear.
Foster's Menswear, very important.
Other establishments are available, etc. Yes.
Max, yeah, do you remember Foster's Menswear?
Say that again?
Do you remember Foster's Menswear, the high street retail outlet of the 90s?
I do, but I don't think there was one on Gentleman's Walk. Gentleman's Walk was in the 70s, though, I think. And I can only ever remember it being pedestrianised.
So as far as you're concerned, the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre didn't happen in the 90s. It actually happened in the 70s. Therefore, Alan Partridge is factually inaccurate.
At the South Free North.
And unless if Alan is just embracing a topic that is a good 20 years old, because that's what he's interested in.
Can you tell us any other sort of facts about Norwich that are applicable to Partridge? Was there any sort of cultural impact that Partridge had on Norwich around this time?
I think generally most people, I think a lot of people in Norfolk and Norwich felt that he was mocking Norwich quite a bit. So there wasn't a massive amount of positivity towards him. I know a lot of people that did like Partridge and stuff, but I never really watched it particularly. But like,
cut him off now.
Every time that I mention I'm from Norwich, it's always the pedestrianisation. Something about brokering a deal with Sky and Cloisters or something, Cathedral Cloisters or something like that. But when the Alpha Papa film happened, they did the premiere at Hollywood Cinema at a shopping centre called Anglia Square, which is like this horrible 1960s shopping centre, and it literally was the biggest thing that happened to Norwich ever, which sort of says something about how steep it is as a city. Yeah.
Awesome. Our Norwich correspondent, Maxim Luckin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Max.
Bye, no
Max.
Problem. Have a lovely day, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Well, I think we learned quite a lot there.
So basically, the pedestrianisation of Norwich City Centre didn't actually happen that time.
So just on the Alan and Jill sex scene, on the commentary, they talk a little bit about how that's filmed. Effectively, it's Steve Coogan and, what's her name again? Julia Deakin, lying side by side in the dark. Well, no, with a script and a microphone, and they're shining a torch, which they had to get rid of in post-production. But they basically read through that whole scene lying on a bed together. But no actual intercourse took place, so I should stress that.
Disappointing.
Yeah, that's right.
You'd have thought that they could have just filmed them just lying in bed and then
dubbed
a voiceover to the instead of lying in bed with a torch.
I mean, who am I to make sense of television?
Well, exactly.
Don't come around here with your common sense, Dark.
Fair enough.
So coitus successfully performed.
Successfully.
I've got a note. Did it? Was there actually a completion? Was the access to Dixon's a?
It might have been scuppered by the moose. I
think the chocolate moose may have stopped play.
I think so.
Rain stopped play.
Yeah.
The aftermath of that encounter was the most times that Steve Coogan corpsed on set trying to have the conversation with Michael.
A famous outtake.
That's part of the add-on Alan sequences.
Yeah. Also, they were very adamant when they made that they would explain it was chocolate as early as possible because they thought that some people may genuinely have thought that she'd taken a shit
on it. It was a dirty protest.
Yeah. Alan's concerns were also the producers of the series' concerns.
It's worth, if you haven't seen the add-on Alan sections, which were on the VHS tapes and are on the DVDs, I think they're all on YouTube as well.
They are available on VHS if you want to go to the past.
At our price records.
Well, if you remember, this was in the 90s, so that was...
Yeah.
That before DVD was a glimmering
to be
the
fair,
eye of whoever invented DVD.
Someone down the road from my house, I went past the other day and they'd
Bristol.
Bristol. I live in exactly Bristol, England. They'd thrown out a load of VHS of Alan Partridge. So that suggests up until recently they were still in active circulation
the
in that house.
Is
at
moribund.
Least.
I do still own the Alan Partridge VHS box sets, but they are basically ornamental.
Waiting for that sweet, sweet Christie's auction.
Exactly. They're going to be worth money someday. You know, especially if his podcast takes off, the interest will skyrocket.
Well, if anyone wants to buy Dark's VHSs off him for £5 billion.
They're not for sale. They're for sale for that amount.
There we go. So as soon as this is over and the chocolate mousse situation is sorted out, Jill's in the cab home, smoking again, obviously. A lot of smoking indoors. It made me realise how old this series is.
I wonder if Alan made a token gesture to pay for the cab as well. Or whether
absolutely not.
No, I think
he
may have driven into the rank. That's about it. And he's obviously back to broadcasting, which is a bit odd. So he's been for a Valentine's dinner, he's had real full sex with a real woman, and then he's gone to broadcast his radio show all in the same night.
But then if you think he's in the graveyard shift, so what time does his show start? I would assume 4 a.m.
Yeah, and also it implies
he's called an all-nighter, basically.
It implies he's kicked her out immediately after sex as well. She didn't get to have a few hours sleep.
Yeah, which sounds very much like Alan, I think.
Sure.
Also, does anybody think that the character of Jill is actually quite similar in many ways to the character of Marsha in Spaced. That always a fag hanging out of the mouth, likes a glass of wine.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of crossover in the Venn diagram, isn't there?
It's basically an audition for Space, isn't it? Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe Peg and Edgar Wright saw this episode and thought, that's quite a good idea for a character.
Controversial statement. So what we're going to do now is we're going to eat some Terry's chocolate orange.
I've already started.
should we also start the Cards Against Alanity section of the show, which has become a regular occurrence for regular listeners?
Yeah, let's head on to that now.
Unless there's a threat of legal action from the makers of Cards.
In which case that section will no longer exist and you'll have no idea what we're talking about.
Although you have hurtfully cut out the bit where he threatens to speak to Norfolk's youngest butcher. and ironically butchers hot chocolates it started with a kiss.
And I love the jumper he's wearing for that sequence. That's a particular Partridge clothing favourite of mine.
They had to go to Ireland and pay over £200 for that jumper because apparently it's what rich farmers wear, and they couldn't find anything ghastly enough in London, so they had to go to Ireland. No offence to our Irish listeners.
So you're saying rich farmers wear ghastly clothing. So you've offended farmers as well. So this is very much
I'm looking forward to having a face off with Chris Morris in a future
episode.
And
they'll throw a cow off a bridge that will land on you.
Exactly. I also love the way that he stresses that she's been sacked as well. He mentions it once and then has to clarify to an audience of one, your contract has been terminated. Also, just a little fact for you about Norwich and its relationship with the series. None of this series was actually filmed in Norwich.
No.
It was all in surrounding areas.
Absolutely bombshell.
Also, Norwich City Councillor blamed the series for Norwich failing to be shortlisted as a European City of Culture in 2008. They claimed it had done
its
reputation too much damage.
It's added to their cultural cachet, I would think. That's outrageous.
They were more than happy to have the Alpha Papa premiere there.
Yeah.
So, double standards. There you go. Anyway, that's probably it for the bulk of this episode. Stay tuned, Cards Against Alanity coming up in a sec. Okay, it's time for Cards Against Alanity. This is a Cards Against Humanity themed quiz. All of the answers and all of the questions are taken from genuine speech from this series of I'm Alan Partridge. What we're going to do is read out an incomplete sentence. Everybody has a card with various phrases on it. They're going to pick the best one, hand it in, and then producer Jed, who is not allowed to speak, is going to ping the bell to signify whose is the best.
And that bell you're about to hear now.
Okay. There we go, that's what it sounds like. So this week's sentence is, you're a rotten shit too, get your... ...
Very good.
So
that is also one of my favourite lines from this episode.
Everybody find your cards.
Mine work for this.
Okay.
Can you read it again, please?
Yeah, it's, you're a rotten shit too, get your... ...
None of mine work.
Thank you very much.
Mine's the shit one.
Thank you very much. Okay. So I'm going to quickly show them all to Jed so that he's had a little chance to review the quality of comedy on offer here. And then I'm going to read them all out and he's going to ping his bell at the one that he thinks is the funniest.
Again, this is very ping exciting.
So far, I should recap the scores as well.
one episode.
it's been a long week. People have short memories. Nick is on 1. Everyone else is on 0.
Hey! So, score again. Nick 1, everyone else.
Here we go. Okay, so I'm going to read all of these out, and then Jed is going to ping his bell at the one that tickles his fancy. You're a rotten shit too, get your 50 shop soiled chocolate oranges. You're a rotten shit too, get your enormous Fox's Glacier Mint. You're a rotten shit too, get your coat, which is the actual line. And you're a rotten shit too, get your 20 foot high chickens.
Hey! He said it again!
Okay. Nick is 2, everyone else
Nick,
is on 0.
You win another segment of Terry's Chocolate Orange.
Is there a cash alternative?
No, there's no cash alternative.
I'll take it. Scoff that down. Enjoy. More Cards Against Alanity next time. So with that, we come to the end of another episode of Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge podcast. Thanks very much for listening to our thoughts on Alan Attraction Episode 2. Join us next week when we delve into Watership Alan. Alan getting into deep water when he presents a promotional video for a boating company. You can catch up with all of us by emailing thepartridgepod@gmail.com. We're on Twitter @thepartridgepod and we're on Facebook, facebook.com/thepartridgepod. We've also got personal accounts if you want to stalk us and be mildly scary within the parameters of acceptable social behaviour. I'm on Twitter at Adam Nonfiction.
I'm on Twitter at Tom Dark.
I am on Twitter at Nick Alder.
I'm also on Twitter, and you can find me on at Tom Stab with 2 B's.
I mean, why would you? I mean, we literally have no idea, but there it is.
Yeah, follow us all, and we'll pick someone exclusively to win nothing. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This is a post-pop podcast produced by Jed Shepherd. To find out more about the records they release and the podcasts they make, head to postpoprecords.com.
Hey!
Hey! Hey! Hey!
tennis. Monkey tennis. Looks like a lady, but really it's a man. Monkey tennis.
Love my face, I'm doing a photo shoot for Vision Express.
Monkey tennis. Monkey tennis.
Got really drunk last night. Sick everywhere.
Roll on the thighs of the virgin.
Monkey tennis.
Never. Also, it was also nominated for a British Comedy Award 2003 for Best TV Comedy, and it lost that as well. Do you want to guess what show it lost it to?
British Comedy 2003.
Better British Comedy in 2000?
No, not a better British Comedy, but it did lose to another programme.
Was that Little Britain?
No.
Again, that's too early, I think.
Give up.
Mighty Boosh?
No, not even that.
That's too early as well, I think.
We're struggling.
British Empire.
Coupling.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, get out. Yeah.
Absolute bum.
Yeah.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.